Hello and welcome to this episode of the IEA podcast. I'm Emily Carver, Media Manager at the IEA. In today's episode, I'm joined by the IEA's Head of Education, Dr. Stephen Davies, and Kate Andrews, who is the Economics Correspondent at The Spectator. We're going to be discussing the government's strategy of localised lockdowns, targeting specific areas where cases have spiked. These were first introduced in Leicester and now cover large areas of the northwest. The intention is that this will prevent a second wave of the virus. But are these likely to prove effective? And has the original justification for lockdown, to protect the NHS, now been completely sidelined, considering how extensive these lockdowns continue to be? If you enjoy this podcast, please do give it a review and subscribe. You can also stay up to date with all our content via our website. Steve, if I may start with you, as you're in Manchester, one of the main areas where the government has introduced these measures. How restrictive are the measures? Are they working? And do you get the impression that people are complying?
Well, I should add that I'm not only in Manchester, but also in Crumpsall, which is the ward that has one of the highest levels of COVID infection, according to the current statistics. It's a good question to ask what is happening or what's being observed, because the actual situation is that nobody, I think it's fair to say, including the local authority, really knows what is going on or what the actual restrictions are meant to be. They don't seem to have received very accurate guidance from the powers that be here at the centre. I was away all last week, and when I got back the last couple of days, it is noticeable that there isn't quite as much going on in terms of people being out and about as there was a couple of weeks ago. But it's not clear that there's been any more significant change other than that. So I am at a bit of a loss as to exactly what is going on and what is meant to be achieved by this. There's undoubtedly a problem in the sense that several of the boroughs in Greater Manchester are recording very significant spikes, if you will, in infection. Oldham, Trafford, Bury was for a while, Rochdale for a while, Manchester itself. But it's not clear to me that there's anything obvious that's happening compared to what was happening a few weeks ago.
So is it a case of a lack of communication from central government? Obviously, the health secretary now essentially has the power to adapt and change these measures as he sees fit. Is it a case that the local authorities are simply not enforcing them, or they don't know what they should be doing?
I think they don't know yet what they should be doing. No doubt the phone lines between Manchester and London are red hot at the moment, with people trying to get, you know, clarity about what on earth is going on. And once they are told, yes, they will do it. But I have to say, the whole thing does not inspire confidence. In fact, it might even give you the sneaking suspicion that some people don't know what they're doing. That would be seriously unfair, I'm sure.
Kate, so you wrote an article recently asking how local are these so-called local lockdowns. In your article, you pointed out that the restrictions that came into play, I think last Friday, have now put 2 in 5 people residing in the northwest, at least in theory, under lockdown measures. So that's over 5% of the entire economy. We really call this localized, Kate.
I think you struggle to call it localized, and there are a few issues here. I think first is that we just don't have the data yet to do a proper local lockdown. Our track and trace system is woeful. The delays and U-turns on the app that should have launched by now aren't expected until the autumn at the earliest, but potentially later, because the government, for some reason, with its fantastic track record on IT projects, thought that it could build its own bespoke app, one that would be much more intrusive into our privacy and collect a lot more data at a central level. Thought that they could build this app. Clearly they couldn't. They've now U-turned, decided to go with the tried and tested framework from the tech giants, which is much more respectful of people's privacy, but we just simply don't have it yet. And without a comprehensive track and trace scheme, you cannot get to a point where you can genuinely say that this street, this office is going to be locked down while the rest of your town, village, or city continues to operate. It wasn't that long ago, just weeks ago, that the Prime Minister at a press conference said he was worried that people would actually be resentful of those, their neighbors, a street next to them, not being in lockdown. But I mean, we haven't tested that yet. We haven't tested people's tolerance for local lockdowns, because these look a lot more like regional lockdowns. And then one has to ask, if it comes to London and they think they have to put London into some kind of local lockdown because infections are spiking, as Steve notes, in very specific areas. At the moment, it feels like they're going to cut off 25% of the UK's economy and put it into lockdown. And that's something that we have to think about, obviously, as we look at growth figures month on month and where we're at in terms of our economic recovery from this virus. I think this trade-off between lives and livelihoods is a bit of a false dichotomy. Obviously, if you don't have a livelihood, your life and the quality of it diminishes rapidly. So I think this trade-off is false. We have to be focused on those economic measures as well. And if you're putting vast parts of the country into lockdown, if London's in a local lockdown, Manchester, Edinburgh, Cardiff, really that starts to look a lot like a national lockdown. Yeah. Maybe not exactly as it was before, but it's economically very damaging.
It was reported in The Spectator that one Conservative MP had sort of likened the support for localised lockdowns with support for tax rises. Everyone in theory is in, you know, is supportive of them until it impacts them as an individual. Do you think that's a fair assessment? And Steve, has there been a lot of local anger, could you say, in the area? Or has it not really hit home yet?
I don't know about anger, a lot of resignation maybe, and a feeling, I mean, oh my God, what now about it all? I think people would be quite sympathetic to the idea of a local lockdown if there was evidence that, as Kate says, it's targeted and it's based on solid local evidence. What's happening is that because, as she says, we do not have an adequate TTI system, test, track, isolate system, we are being forced to impose very heavy-handed lockdowns, which cover, in the Greater Manchester case, 2.5 million people. And similarly, a very large number of people in West Yorkshire as well. It's going on right across the north of England right now with major effects. And I think people would be more satisfied with this if there was really like dense, granular information. In fact, if we had that, we wouldn't need lockdowns. If we had a proper TTI system, we would be able to control the spread of the virus, which is what we want to do to avoid the proverbial second wave, simply through that mechanism. The problem right from the start has been that the British government, in contrast to, say, the German government, has completely failed to do that. And as a result, we found it much more difficult to control it without using very heavy-handed blunt instrument methods, which do a lot of damage. With the scale of the local lockdowns being suggested, so, and also the simultaneity of it, so that it's not just like one town here and then a month later another town there, it's five or six major metropolitan areas at the same time, you begin to think, well, you might as well have a national one as actually, you know, go this far. But I think that does then make it very obvious that we're talking here about some pretty difficult trade-offs, because you're talking about basically messing up an already weakened economy. And it would obviously be much more better if we could be targeted, but that means more testing, and that's what we don't have.
Emily, quite quickly on that point about frustration, it has appeared so far throughout this crisis anyway that UK residents are very happy to comply to these lockdown measures. In fact, Brits were much more cautious about coming out of lockdown than their European counterparts, something that wasn't expected but ended up being the case. I think, however, as we move into the rest of the year, potentially even 2021, not knowing if or when we are going to get this vaccine, which I think is almost dangerously coded as the silver bullet, as if, you know, we'll have it in the very, very near future and we can just go back to normal. Best to hope for the best, but also prepare for the worst. I think the frustration down the line will come in when people enter into these local lockdowns, but don't necessarily know when they're going to come out of them. So obviously when the first national lockdown came in, it was for a series of 3 weeks, and then they would analyze the situation and decide whether or not to extend. And we found ourselves in months and months of a very full lockdown. If people go into these local lockdowns knowing it truly is for 3 weeks, they'll get it under control, it'll be fine, we can come back out, I think there'll be a lot more time and sympathy for it than if you go into local lockdown and a month later or 6 weeks later, you're still there. People will be much more hesitant to have their area locally locked down if they don't know when they're coming back out.
People need a reasonable understanding of why they're doing something. And I know that a source of frustration has been
that there's no clear objective criteria of why the government is triggering these local lockdowns. And obviously that relates to the track and trace and the lack of consistent testing and tracking. The health secretary has been insistent that this is, you know, there are too many factors to consider able to produce a sort of one size fits all approach to guidelines. Do you think that's fair, or is that simply just showing how incoherent the strategy has become?
Well, I think that's fair, because it is true that there will be particular local circumstances or particular local variations. Things like the demography, for example. A part of the country which has a disproportionately large number of elderly people, let's be stereotypical about this and say somewhere like Eastbourne, that would require much stricter controls than an area where the average age is much younger. Because one of the things we do definitely know about this virus is that if you're over 70, it's a very dangerous illness. It has an IFR equivalent to cholera, for heaven's sake, whereas it's much milder for the young. So yes, you do need to have variation, and I can understand that point. The problem is that you do also at the same time, and I do, you must say, I don't envy Matt Hancock, you do also have to have some kind of clear idea about what the triggers are, regardless of those local variations, or taking them into account, rather, and also what the triggers are for lifting it, so that people have a clear idea of when they can expect to see it happening. I think in the case of, say, Greater Manchester, where I am, that what they simply got was they got figures from the hospitals that there was a sharply accelerating increase in several of the boroughs in the Greater Manchester area. And they clearly thought, if we don't do something to stop the spread right now, it's going to get out of control. We'll have a major outbreak in a major metropolitan area. What is very disturbing is that this has simultaneously happened in several metropolitan areas. That is extremely bad news, obviously.
Just before we finish, do we have a historical precedent, these kind of localised lockdowns from previous pandemics or from other countries?
Oh, yes, absolutely. In fact, historically, with major pandemics, this was one of the things that was done. Local, on a very local level, people would take often extremely ruthless and stringent action to deal with it. So the famous case during the Black Death was Milan, where Bernardo Visconti, the local lord and total tyrant, nailed lots and lots of people into their houses, and they were left there until people came along 40 days later and found out they were still alive or not. So this kind of thing has happened many times before. I would add, by the way, I have to say this, certain Conservative MPs have been both irresponsible and amazingly ignorant in claiming that there's a connection between these lockdowns and the presence of large numbers of people of South Asian origin. As I said, that is seriously irresponsible, but also completely false and ignorant. So here in Manchester, for example, the borough with the largest and most acute increase is Trafford, which is an overwhelmingly white borough with a small minority of people of African and West Indian descent up at the top end of it. So that's just, ignorant is the only word for it, actually, as well as being very dangerous, I think.
Well, thanks for clarifying that, because that's, of course, is an argument that's been going around social media. So that's interesting to hear the counter to that. Just to finish, Kate, do we have a prediction of how these local lockdowns will impact the economy? Have we seen anything from the north where these actions have already been taken? Of course, uncertainty is always terrible for the economy, but do you have an idea?
Well, look, if this were pre-COVID times, if this were normal times, and you were putting Greater Manchester and surrounding areas into a local lockdown and impacting 5% of the economy, that in and of itself would almost certainly trigger a recession. Now, we're in a very, very deep recession. These are not normal times, so it's being viewed differently. But there's absolutely no doubt that the longer local lockdowns go on for and the less targeted they are, the more impact in a negative way that's going to have to our economic recovery. It's going to be much harder to bounce back. And Emily, you make a very important point about confidence, because the narrative coming from the government over the past week or so has taken a real turn. It is no longer, you know, let's push Eat Out to help out, let's get people back into the offices. This was the narrative 2 weeks ago. These were the plans that they created to get people back out there. The government itself is not pushing those lines anymore. We're hearing some rather terrifying rhetoric from the government about how dangerous the second wave is going to be, about the precautions and measures that might need to be taken, which are very draconian. Even reports today that local authorities could be given the rights to demolish buildings and so on if they thought that there was a COVID infection in them. Things that just we weren't even doing during the first wave that could be more severe during the second. And that lack of confidence or inspiring rhetoric is going to do nothing to help stimulate the economic growth that's going to be so desperately needed. And I guess the last thing I would say, looking at these local lockdowns, is, you know, in theory, obviously, I'm very sympathetic to the idea that if you can target a street or an office where you see this outbreak, you should do so to get it under control quickly. But we must acknowledge through our perspective on local lockdowns that we have completely moved the goalpost as to what the original purpose of lockdown was. It was to create capacity in the National Health Service. If you did experience symptoms of this virus, you would be treated with dignity and respect, and you would get access to medical care, and medics would do everything they could to help you. Now we have a very different path. We are trying to go down a path where nobody gets this virus. You can have that debate, of course, and there are certainly merits to trying to make sure that as few people contract the virus as possible. But this is very different than the original purpose of lockdown. We're moving into a different phase. And we need to be very honest about that and transparent about the actual purpose of the lockdown. Because if there is huge capacity in the NHS, which there is at the moment, one could question why they are so keen and quick to push the button on the local lockdown if the virus could be handled by medical professionals.
Yes, I know many have floated the idea that it's because of the annual winter crisis. And if spikes are too large, then that will be devastating for the government as well as the public.
But it is August right now.
Yes,
and we are
Yes, of course. Well, thank you so much for joining me. That was really, really interesting. Thank you very much.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the IEA podcast. Please do give us a review and subscribe, and you can also check out all our latest content over on our Twitter, IEA London, or our website, iea.org.uk. Thanks for listening.